What is fear, and is it the same as worry?
Fear is a biological response to stimulus. Primarily, that's what fear is a biological response to stimulus. That's why it's an option, is because biology is somewhat within your control. So primarily we see fear as the biological response to stimulus, and that's why everybody's fears are different, because everybody has different responses to stimulus. Is it the same as worry? This is where your language doesn't necessarily serve you, because worry we see as fear replicated, meaning you have a fear that's a biological response to a stimulus. And that can be very natural. A loud sound, something like that, can cause you to be in fear. Startled, maybe, is another way of saying it. And as you experience your fear, as you experience yourself in that way, and it comes, peaks, and abates, that's sort of a normal fear pattern. When you have a fear, and it comes and it peaks, and then it levels off, and you stick with it for a long time, that's what we call either hamster wheel thinking. You can call it worry. And that's kind of why when you're in the fear-based operating system, it's so difficult, is because you don't recognize that you're staying with a fear much longer than the biological stimulus requires. And that's a really important thing to be very clear on, is fear is a biological response to stimulus, and how you decide to process your response to stimulus can really change that picture into something that's more healthy. So we would say the worry picture is across here. You know, a fear goes up and it just stays there. Money is the perfect one, right? Up and it just stays there. And tends to go like that from what we've seen. So that picture, this part of the picture is the worry. This part is the fear. Yeah? So fear is the biologic response to some stimulus. And then worry is when you keep that stimulus high, even when the stimulus, or keep your reaction high, even when the stimulus has abated. Now, you might say, I worry about money because I constantly have bills. Okay, what we try to do is, even if you constantly have bills, each bill needs its own pattern. But what tends to happen is, like, we'll just keep using money. Bill comes, you think, I can't pay it. Fear response. Then you start in worry, I can't pay it, I can't pay it, I can't pay it. The next bill comes, and you go up a notch, even if you've paid this one. And that's why it just keeps going up and up. Many people, once they get to a certain level of fear about a subject, don't realize that they can let that fear go. So that picture, if you call this part worry, you tend to worry and then fear on top of that, and fear on top of that. Spin you up. It's hard to get out of.
What are anxiety / panic attacks?
What we would call anxiety is very close to worry, in the sense that you have that, it's, we keep back up to our picture, fear response, and then worry comes across here. Anxiety just is that bar, but not attached to any specific biological stimulus, right? So the bill comes, you go into fear, and then you worry about that, and you stay at that level of fear, right? Mm-hmm. When you're in anxiety, you've detached your anxiety from any specific stimulus. We might say trigger. The trigger, the stimulus is gone. So instead of having a pattern where you can say, I was in fear, okay, I paid that bill, back down to baseline, instead of I was in fear, worry, like that, like we showed before, when you're in anxiety, chronic anxiety especially, you're here and you don't know why. Mm-hmm. And this is why you have to be conscious. You have to learn to be conscious. It's because if you're constantly in anxiety with no attachment to this, there's no solution to that. The only solution is to make the choice for consciousness. That's why we have so many tools to help you guys, is because this is very common. You know, if we had worry be a line, anxiety is a bar, right? And then panic attacks, you know, that's kind of a diagnosis thing, and we try to stay away from diagnosis type things, but what the underlying energetic of panic attacks is, when you've done this fear response, worry, and then you double down and you get another fear response and another fear response, at some point your body overloads. And a panic attack really looks like overload. And again, not diagnosing anyone, but what we would say is if you find yourself in panic attack, the solution or a helpful solution is to go to what is true now, get in the moment as best you can, and ask yourself, is this feeling attached to a specific subject? Is this feeling attached to something specific? Because again, if fear is a biological response to stimulus, all these other pictures that we're calling all these different words are way up here. And you want to get back to down here where you can do something about it. Track it back to what you can actually do something about. And that's very difficult to do if you're not in the moment. Because a lot of times, all of this business here is past, future, all that anxiety, that bar. Where does that anxiety come from? All those layers of worry stacked on top of each other. So you've got worry about money when I was 5, worry about money when I was 10, worry about money when I was 15, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, becomes anxiety about money. And we've said it before, do you have a bill to pay today? No, but you're thinking about money nonstop. Therefore, it's not connected to an actual biological stimulus. It's trapped in that band of anxiety that really is habitual response. And it's so habituated, you think it's the cause, but it's not. It's not the cause. Because you don't know what the cause is anymore, because you're up here. So the what we would love to see people be able to do is have a stimulus, have a biological response to that. You're going to have a very hard time getting completely away from fear. You're going to have a strong response. At the moment when you're having that strong response, being aware that you're having that strong response and being aware that you have a choice. And that choice can turn back and come back down to baseline where you say, whew, okay. And then you come at it from consciousness. You come at it from, I don't have to go into the habituated band of anxiety or habituated pattern of worry in order to have a solution to this situation. In fact, the solution does not exist up there. The solution is not up there. But that's the only place you've known to look for it. And that's why we say if thinking could have solved it, it would have solved it long ago, because you sure have thought about it enough. That's where thinking happens, is in that band of anxiety. But the truth of the matter is back where the stimulus happened. The loud sound outside, that's what needs to be looked at. You need to go outside and see if something's fallen over or if there's something out there you need to be worried about. Not just go, and the panic attack on top of that debilitates you. In essence, kind of paralyzes you, and you can't act because it's down here. But a lot of this has been trained to not look at down here because there's a perception that down here is the problem, when really the problem is hanging out in the place where you can't make a change. That's the problem if we're talking problems.
What is the difference between an irrational fear and a survival instinct fear?
Most fear is rational because you have a survival instinct, and the survival instinct says stay alive at all costs. There's no hedging your bets on that. The survival instinct says stay alive at all costs. So any fear you have comes down to a survival fear at the very bottom of it. And that's a rational fear to have. So we would say the response to fear can be what you might refer to as irrational if you get up in that band and you spend a lot of time.
A survival instinct fear is non-negotiable. You're going to have survival instinct fears all the time. And we would say rather than call it an irrational fear, we would say an irrational reaction to a survival instinct. You're having an irrational reaction to your survival instinct. And the irrational reaction to your survival instinct is to believe that there's no choice but to live in that band. That would be what we would call irrational. And to believe that there's a solution. There's no choice but to be there, and that somehow if you keep doing what you've always done, you're going to find a solution there, which that don't work. It's down here. It's at that point when you're actually having the biological response to stimulus. And that's a difficult place because a lot of times in that biological response to stimulus, you're also having increased adrenaline, heart rate, sweating, tears, panic. You know, all that kind of body stuff can get stirred up in that moment. And when the body stuff gets involved, it can be really hard to separate out. I'm having a body reaction here, but I don't need to base my next step on my body reaction. That convincing yourself that it's okay to be freaked out, as the as the phrase goes, and not act for freak out. That would be coming into rationality about it. And that takes presence of mind. And that's what the tools and striving to be consciousness gives you, is because as you strive to be conscious, you say, in every moment, a very good tool here is what is true now. In every moment, you have access to what is true now, and you can say, I'm wearing brown pants. And in that moment, you will break up that pattern that wants to rush ahead into that fear response, if you remember to use it. And that's why we've been doing this for as long as we have.
What are the top five fears?
Top five. We have no idea what your top five fears are. The ones we always see, the subjects we always see fear around. Money, housing, job, relationships, and health. Those are top five subjects. Individual fears. We've seen people get as scared of something like a spider as they get as almost getting hit by a bus. It's a really individuated thing. But those five subjects for sure.
What causes chronic fear?
It's the same kind of a picture where you get into that band of, you have a trigger, you go into, it's almost like a trigger, which can be anything that causes you to feel fear, flops into this place, this band we're calling it, and then you think that's your life. Right? You think the band is where you're living. But the truth is, the band is where you go when triggered, not where you live. Where you live is down here, where you're having the initial experience. So chronic fears continue to revisit that band instead of realizing that band is like a no man's land where you can't find solutions and you only recycle the anxiety and pain. It's when you recognize, oh my God, here I am again, one more time. Is there a generating event? Is there a trigger right now? Is there that thing that started this off? Or am I just doing this because it's what I did yesterday and what I did the day before and what I was taught by my mom and what my community around me supports? Right? That's where we see that chronic lingering. All those words that you've brought up come from being in the band where you think everything's happening in relationship to fear. And really, that's just the place that you've gone and not known how to get out of.
Can fears and phobias be past life related?
Sure, absolutely. You know, past lives have a lot of influence, and we like to call them alternate expressions of your soul, just like you are, an expression of your soul. And absolutely, they can be past life related, you want to call it. Especially now, as your vibrational rate is increasing and you're becoming more conscious, you're having more opportunities to integrate those other soul versions of you, other versions of your personality self out there. You're getting in touch with them. You're starting to feel them. We see it all the time. So yeah, you can have fears that come from those lifetimes. Now, the thing you have to remember is those lifetimes didn't have grocery stores. Those lifetimes didn't have antibiotics. Those lifetimes did not have a surgery wing at the hospital. So when their fears come, when you tap into the fears of those alternate expressions, they can be extremely, the word primal isn't the right fear, but right word, but they're very, very intense around life death. Life death was really, really, really way more real than it is for you guys, the normal group of people we talk to on a daily basis. Because back then, you know, get cut with the wrong kind of thing, there you go. There's no such thing as penicillin. You know, if you got a bad injury, there's no such thing as somebody who can sew it up unless it's a pretty straightforward thing. And, you know, life expectancies were really short. You have a baby and it doesn't go well. You die, the baby dies. An appendix? Who fixes that? The people nowadays fix that. So the fear level that the alternate expressions experienced on that whole survival level were so much stronger than you guys feel these days that if you start tapping into them, you can be like, I have to be really afraid because somehow I'm just so afraid that this thing's going to happen to me, when it's not actually a real fear in you now. And we always say, you know, when you start to pick up on that stuff, ask yourself, am I in danger in this moment? Literally, am I in danger in this moment? I'm just sitting on my couch and I'm afraid that, like, I'm going to die of gangrene. Why is that happening? Well, clearly that's not happening to you as your current personality self. But it's happening to you as an expression of your soul. And the key thing there is to say, great, it's wonderful to learn that about you. Thank you very much. I never knew I could be that afraid of gangrene, but there you go. I'd also like to know more things about you. What's your trade? What are your skills? What's it like to live in your time? Don't stop at just learning about the fears from those other lifetimes. And that's the temptation, is to stop at the fears you find from those other lifetimes, because they're big and loud and strong and scary, and they trigger your fears. But when you notice that you're in a fear that has no relevance to this year, chances are the alternate expression is having an impact. And that's a great thing, in the sense that you want to start integrating all your alternative expressions. That's part of living as Homo Spiritus, is having access to all of your alternate expressions. And they're going to show up with their fears first. We haven't seen it go any other way. We just haven't seen it go any other way. So if they don't, great. But if they do, be prepared that that's normal.
What is the relationship between addictions and fear?
When addictions are involved in fears, what ends up happening is that you believe you can get out of fear by doing a certain behavior, right? Sex, drugs, alcohol, whatever, obsessive computer doing. You believe that that's going to fix the thing you're afraid of. It's going to give you love and safety, is another way of saying it. And when you try it, a lot of times, you can get into another pattern, kind of like that bar we talked about earlier, where you think that's solving the problem. And what it can be is that it can just be masking it. So you get a trigger response in the fear place. You come into that bar and you mask it with alcohol or drugs or whatever your, you know, whatever your choice is. You're masking it. But you're not actually coming out of it down to here. You're just covering it up, making it a little less loud. So, and then some people are just biologically more apt to become addicted to certain substances. It's just a chemistry thing. So there's that aspect too. But in some cases, and in probably the more relevant to the bigger audience case, is you get up in here and you know you're anxious, and so to feel less anxious, you drink a bunch. Or, you know, you take a bunch of drugs to not feel anxious. But that doesn't get you back down here to where you're having a neutral experience. This is neutrality down here. And neutrality isn't numb. Neutrality is simply going, this is happening. This is happening. Cool, this is happening. Oop. And then you're up here and you got to make a choice. And this place right here is a lot of what our work helps people with, is making that choice when you get to that triggered place.
Is fear always going to be a part of being human?
This is the way we see it going down. Because you have a body, because you have a survival instinct, fear will always be a part of you. But that pattern that we've talked about won't be. You'll go whoop, 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 maybe whoop, whoop sometimes. But you'll catch the fact that you're afraid before it gets into this habitual place. You won't cover it up with other substances. You'll face it. And you'll recognize that even when you're afraid, you can choose to be fascinated by the experience rather than go into habit about the experience. And this is all the habit. That's another way to get out of fear, is to say, okay, I'm fascinated by this. And we know this isn't easy, but it's not easy to be in fear like that either. That's hard. So at least this one has an upside, meaning you get back down to neutral. So you put a little effort in and you change the way you experience this very, very human thing. Now you could say, I don't want to have fear in my life. Okay, well then you're probably not going to have a very powerful survival instinct, and it's going to be hard for you to stay going. There's something healthy about having a good survival instinct and that generating fear in you. But the unhealthy thing is, once you've not died, don't be up here. Be back down here on the neutral place. When an unhealthy survival instinct says, I need to accumulate awareness of every option for triggers to my survival instinct, meaning I need to know all the things that could get me dead, and you spend all of your time looking on the lookout for things that could get you dead. Oh, I'm not sure I should go to that party, you know. It's dangerous to drive at night, right? That kind of stuff. Or you say, I remember that one time somebody told me a story that they went to a party and it was dangerous at that party. So maybe I shouldn't go to this party. So you're in the past or the future about it. That's not this neutral line, right? That's this band.
If we know the vastness of our soul, how do we become fearless?
Well, it's all well and good to know the vastness of your soul, and we encourage people and we teach people how to do that all the time. But you're in a body. So it's really what happens is you can have access to the vastness of your soul. You know, you go to the vastness of the soul shop, and you open the door, and you get out your credit card, and you buy vastness of your soul, and you say, vastness of my soul is mine! And you take it home with you, and you have a body. And your body goes, ooh, how are you going to pay that credit card bill now? You charge the vastness of your soul on it. Or, well, you know, a great example, but it's so true. Something falls over in the yard. You're going to do it. Somebody steps off the curb and then steps back. You're going to do it. It's going to happen. So even with access to the vastness of your soul, you will still have an adrenaline response to something like that. It's what you do with it. Now, the vastness of your soul can be like, it's happened so many times. It's really okay. You can come back to neutral. See, because the temptation is going to be go straight to here, right? And the reaction when you have the vastness of your soul, which we think is a great term, the vastness of your soul is, you start up that thing and they go, ooh, this is a fun thing, but we've done it 5 million times, let's not. Or, ooh, this is fun, this is fun, this is fun. Kind of boring now. Are you bored? We're kind of bored. Let's go back here. Because at neutral, everything is more likely to have an option for fascination. And the body's not going all the time. So that's why that neutral place is great. So if you're going to plug your vastness of your soul in anywhere, plug it in down here. And let's make that neutral place really juicy, where there's lots of things to explore, not from a triggered fear response, but from a juicy, 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 juicy. And if your survival instinct gets a little blip, it gets a little blip. It's going to get a little blip. You're going to get blips. It's what you do with the blips. And the vastness of your soul doesn't fix that. That's your job. As the personality self integrating the energy of your soul, your role is to say, oh, yeah, 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 this just happens sometimes. This just happens sometimes. Something fell over in the yard, and we go like that, and then we stop. If you saw the thing fall over in the yard, you'd probably go, and then it would go away. If you just hear it, then you get past, future, imagination, wonder what it could be. That's what happens.
Do fears get stored in the body, even if we're not aware of them?
Okay, when you have a physical response that you are saying you're not consciously aware of your of being afraid, we're just going to tell you right now, you guys are afraid all the time. Guaranteed, you're afraid all the time. We've never met anybody who isn't afraid all the time. It's, excuse us, are you doing this kind of fear or are you doing these kind of fears? That's really the difference between somebody saying, I'm worried or anxious, and somebody saying, I don't seem to be afraid. It's because you're managing them. But every single one of you, we could think of a fear right now that you're having. So when you ask, do fears get stored in the body, what happens is the body will maybe offer you indications that the fear is there, even if you're not noticing it. Like an example, you're doing the dishes. And there's a sharp knife. You're afraid you're going to cut yourself. You are. You're afraid you're going to cut yourself. Are you up here with that fear? Or are you going booka, 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 booka with that fear? We don't know. But you are afraid you're going to cut yourself. You have to be. Now you might say, well, I'm not really afraid like that afraid. Well, that's the point. Because you're not aware of it, you might say, why am I sweating? Well, you're washing a sharp knife. Your body's like, mm-hmm. Remember that gangrene lifetime we talked about earlier? Mm-mm. Sharp things? Be afraid. Your brain may go, I don't need to be afraid, but your body may be contributing to an awareness of it. So this is a balance, right? There's a real balance that goes on here. And if you feel your body being afraid, ask yourself, what am I doing right now? What am I doing right now? What am I doing right this moment? And see if you can create a dialogue between what the generating event is and the fact that your body's thrown up here, when maybe your awareness is still kind of down here someplace. That's a real individuated thing, but it's true. Yeah, and a fun thing to do, and definition of fun here, but a fun thing to do might be to ask yourself, what am I afraid of, over and over again, throughout the day, to become aware of the reality of the fear you're in, not so that you freak yourself out and you go up here, so you can give yourself credit for being down here and realize, wow, I'm afraid all the time, but I'm not doing this thing. I'm doing this thing. And that builds that muscle. Because part of what has to happen is you build a muscle
that strong in boopa, boopa, boopa kind of dealings with fears, so that you don't think your only alternative is to go here when something very intense occurs.
What about when you wake up in fear?
Combination of things. One, when you're transitioning into or out of the sleep state, it's a huge change, right? It's a huge change. Just think, you lay down and you go unconscious. Sounds kind of like death, and your body can interpret it that way. And when you come back out of it, it can feel like, oh God, I'm in this thing again, this body again, I'm doing this lifetime again, that's hard. Why did I ever come to this earth place in the first place? And you can have that reentry, in essence, reentry issues, where it's like, I'm doing this again. So a thing to do if you're having the morning fear pattern is to say, I'm choosing to be here. And see what resistance you have to telling yourself that. Because the truth is you are, but you have resistance to that fact. Because this pattern is very strong, typically. If you're having the morning reentry issues, this pattern up here, you feel like I have a trigger, I go straight into this, and there's nothing that can happen here but just static, static, static. Whereas if you go bloop, 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 life feels like there's a lot more options.
And when you're afraid falling asleep?
Because some people get really afraid right when they start to fall asleep, because it's just usually alternate expression connections about dying. Because it's like that surrender place. And what we always suggest is you just run through it in your head, and it's okay to do this. Is the door locked? Is the cat in or the dog out? Or whatever you do in the nighttime, allow yourself to not be as necessarily ritualistic about it. Like, I feel safe because the door is locked. But just to talk yourself into, I have prepared a safe place for myself to have this other way of being human happen. Because the awake human, the asleep human, could you talk about two totally different things or what? That's like so different, right? You're having such a radically different thing. I don't think we've ever talked about this before. How radically different is that? A sleep human and awake human? Crazy different. So yeah, your survival instinct has to have a relationship to both of those things. And probably the only reason all of you don't have a hard time falling asleep is because it just hasn't killed you yet. So you've turned down the dial on how loud that has to scream. But how many lifetimes have you had where you got killed in your sleep? You know, it's a good time for the neighboring camp to come and raid you, right? So there's lots of reasons for you to be afraid. So being afraid isn't wrong. It's how you handle the fact that you're afraid. And yeah, there's a great reason to be afraid right before you go to sleep. And how about instead of that fear, we have fascination, the exploration of the sleep state. Usually it's either past life or current life jeopardy during the night. So as adults, you can say, you know, I've secured my home. And as younger people, you know, if younger people are having a hard time falling asleep, you can reassure them by taking them around and showing them that you've locked the door. And you might say, well, but isn't that being habitual? I'm like, well, sometimes healthy habits are just that, healthy. And showing a little kid that the front door's locked, if that helps them calm that part of their survival instinct that says, nighttime's dangerous time. It's a good trade-off in the beginning, right, as they're growing up. Mm-hmm. And if you have to do it as an adult, most of you lock the door before you go to bed. Why? It makes you feel safer. It's not wrong to seek safety. It's wrong to think that we shouldn't say wrong. It's difficult to think that the only way you're going to feel good about being human is if you're safe all the time, because that's impossible. It's a jeopardy just walking into the bathroom. So you have to be really careful that you don't crank this up to, I only feel safe if. It's, this thing helps me feel a little safer. I'm going to do that. You know, you put those things in the bathtub that grip your feet a little. It's prudent. It's just prudent. There's a difference between prudence and habitual. No.
What happens if I ignore fear?
If you want growth and transformation, you can't ignore fear. Right? So if you ignore fear, you're ignoring a real truth about being human. And if you ignore fear and you ignore that real truth about being human, you can be in what they call denial. And denial can keep you from having an authentic experience of yourself. Now, some fears need to not get as much time as they get. All right. So that's not ignoring. That's saying, I see you and I am not going to put up with living here. That's not ignoring. That's saying, I want to transform relationship, which looks like little bumps or, you know, little arrows. Mm-hmm.
What do I do with fears and panic attacks?
Sometimes panic attacks and fear can feel debilitating, can feel like you cannot function because of them. One step we would suggest immediately is to say, am I actually in fear now, or actually in danger now? What you're needing to do is interrupt the neural pathways, because right now you're just using one little freeway in your brain that goes, trigger who, paralyzed, trigger who, can't do anything. You want to slow that down. One of the best things we've ever had for doing that is What Is True Now. And the trouble with What Is True Now is this. People say, What Is True Now? I'm wearing brown pants and I'm still really afraid. That's not What Is True Now. What Is True Now is I'm wearing brown pants. And then see where you go next. I'm really afraid. Okay, what else is true now? I'm wearing a green shirt. Like, take a breath. And we're exaggerating the breath, but we're not making fun. We mean it. Take a breath. There needs to be a commitment to, I want this pattern to change, which means not believing that it can't. Understand? Not believing that you have no choice. Because you haven't had a way out of it, it's been very, 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 very tempting to think that was the only way you could live. However, by asking the question, you indicate that you're ready for a change. And the change has to be connected to the idea that you're willing to say, no, I won't do this again. Focus on something else. No, is this easy? No. But what you're doing sounds horribly hard. So this is not as hard as that. It may feel very challenging in the beginning, but this challenge has an end that's different from the challenge you're in now. And if you just literally have to say, what is true now? I have 2 feet. What is true now? I have 2 hands. What is true now? I have brown hair. What is true now? And each time you're doing that, that desire to run that fear pattern is really strong in you, but you're saying, this is not as important to me as doing something else. As doing something else. It's a priority thing. Not to diminish the difficulty that situation is. However, you have to make a priority that you want to interact with it in a different way without succumbing to the idea that there's no way you could react to it in a different way. That's the trick. Because inside there's a pre-programmed belief that says there's no other way to do this. And that's what we're arguing with. Is there no other easy way to do this? Maybe. But there's a challenging way, but not a seemingly impossible way. Which is what that pattern feels like.
How do you bring ahas and insight to chronic fears?
Well, in that case, what happens is if you're not going to want to, you're not going to want to allow insight to inform your journey if you are navigating your world constantly by fear, because you're fearful that the insight either won't show up on time or will suck or will be too hard or you can't handle it or, and that just, we don't have big enough hands, right? Okay. So if you're looking to, how do I, instead of making the choice for fear to navigate my life, make the choice for insight to navigate my life, this is why we have been working with you guys for 10 years, is to help you shift out of the belief that the only way you're going to actually be able to handle your life is through a navigation by fear pattern, and shift into the knowing that that navigation by fear is a very narrow, painful place to live, and that down here, when you're not having the body and all that stuff contributing to your freak out all the time, it's a very juicy place to live. And starting to recognize that the juicy place to live is far more fascinating than this stuff ever was. And the juicy changes and evolves and becomes more, whereas this is just hamster wheel over and over and over, same thing. So how do you make that change? You make the change by deciding that consciousness empowers you rather than deciding that fear drives you. And it's the difference between the fear-based operating system and the consciousness-based operating system. The fear-based operating system says, all I care about is what fear tells me what to do. And the consciousness-based operating system says, I'm going to make room for insight because I want my life to be more juicy. I'm going to make room for insight because I'm sick of doing this all the time. And I'm going to wait open to insight because I am ready to live as a human in a way that's never been possible before, which is integrated with your soul's energy. So that fear isn't your guiding force. Fear is something that happens down here. Boop, 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 boop. Oh, yeah, I deal with it. You know? Oh, cars need air in the tires. Needs gas. Boop, 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 boop. Right? That's just stuff. Instead of it being, oh, what's that sound the car's making? Oh, my God, the last time the car made that sound, the car's making that sound. Right? It's, oh, car's making a sound. Better go to the mechanic. And yes, you can learn to live like that. You can. It just takes a commitment to first seeing that this isn't the only way, and then making a commitment to choose out of the neural pathways that say this is the only way. It's a step-by-step thing. This isn't a magic wand kind of thing, but it's absolutely possible. And every step you make on the path of this feels better and better and better. So it rewards you very fast.
How do I transform fear-driven neural pathways?
Okay, so the key about new neural pathway use is this. Practice. Just like anything else, it's a learned skill. It's a learned behavior. It's something else. Every single thing you've ever wanted to do well, you've practiced at. Whether it be walking, singing, dancing, driving, you didn't get it right the first time. And if you did, you didn't get it right every time after that without putting more into it. And you can always build on it. You can always add to it. Even if you did that thing perfectly right the first time, the first time you rolled a bowling ball, you got a strike, probably didn't the next time. Right? There's always room for practice, muscle memory, new neural pathways to be involved. So part of it is just not saying, part is not giving up and continuing to commit and allowing yourself to do compare you to you so you see that you're making progress. You know, you don't compare yourself to anybody else. You only compare yourself to you. Wow, I compared myself to me today, and instead of being fear up here, I went, oh, wow, really? That's all? Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. And sure, it could be, ooh, big car repair bill. And you have absolutely every justification, and all your friends and neighbors would say, freak out. Get up in there and freak out. Go for it. But you said, no, you know what? That freak out is not as interesting to me as saying what is true now, making choices that allow me to come back down to baseline. Maybe it's baseline with less money in my bank, but it's still baseline, where neutrally I can have an experience that's juicy. And then when you go to the car repair shop, you're not going there from fear. You're going there from perhaps a bit of concern, but you're not going there from this place. You're going there from, I'm doing my best to stay as close to neutral as I can because there's something more to learn from this place than that will ever give me. There's something more to learn from here than this will ever give me. And the hilarious thing is, even in our little picture, this, you could probably say, oh, that looks boring, Elohim. That looks like a boring life. This looks exciting. Yeah, okay. You know what excitement is? Adrenaline. You tired? You worn out? Have you had enough of just adrenaline all the time? The juiciness of neutrally experiencing the fascination that comes with integrating your soul's perspective will end up being this foundation of strength, of awareness, of insight, of just yummy. This is just straight, get your body all involved, your adrenals all involved, your heart rate, all that stuff that you go to the doctor for. That's the sound for that. Down here it's like yummy, yummy, yum, yum, yum. That's what that sound is. And, you know, it goes like that. And you have a choice. You have a choice every time. That's what people don't want to believe, because when they look at their fears, they don't want to believe that they can choose out of them because they haven't. And then if we say, you can choose out of this fear and you haven't, you're tempted to beat yourself up and be mean to yourself and say, I suck, I suck, I suck. But the truth is, you can choose out of almost all fears. Some folks have chemical imbalance that makes it harder. So we want to definitely acknowledge that. But for the vast majority of people, for the vast majority of fears, you can choose out of them, but you have to make a strong commitment to it, because that fear, that fear place in you is extremely biologically driven by the survival instinct, as we've explained, and it creates in you that temptation to go into that bar. And everybody you know is happy. Well, we shouldn't say everybody. Your society at large happily lives in that bar. Loves there too. Happily, right? It's what we call familiar suffering, because they're not joyful, but they're content to suffer rather than face it and say, I can make a change and be committed, and just as committed as you are to get a high bowling score, to have a different reaction to your fears, to consistently do it. But there's a pre-programmed belief that it can't change, therefore it doesn't change. Because it didn't change, it can't change. For so huge of a percentage of you, that's just not true. And some fears will be easier than others, so practice with the ones that don't freak you out so much. And every time you have a little one, go, yeah, that's right, I'm learning. I'm getting it. I'm growing. It's changing. It's happening. So that when you have a big one and you find yourself up here, you have some track record to pull you back into that response.
Are we naturally hardwired for fear?
The answer, of course, is yes. But you're also capable of great joy. And you have to choose for it most of the time. To choose for it. Every single time you're having joy, fun, love, there's a fear there too. And you're choosing that that fear isn't as loud in that moment. Your greatest memories, your greatest experiences had fear in them. You know, some people are like, oh man, remember that time we rode in the hot air balloon? Wasn't that glorious? Yeah, and the whole time, we don't care who you are, underneath there is a part of you going, we could plummet to our deaths at any moment. But it's not as loud. It's the ratio thing, right? It's the ratio. It's the ratio between what is going to be, like we call it, the loudest instrument in your band. It's the mixing board. Get the dials out. So yeah, when you're born, you cry. But you don't cry because something's wrong with you. You cry because you've had a big shock. Things have changed. And you're having a normal reaction to that big shock and change. And as an infant, maybe you can't come out of that. You know, you might go up here and say, freak out, oh my God, what's going on, for a while. But, you know, as a conscious adult, we want these little bumps to be smaller and smaller as you can. And if you get up here, recognize it and get yourself out. What is true now helps a lot with that. So does just going, oh my God, I'm in that thing that Elohim talks about. I don't want to be here. That can do it too. Basically becoming conscious. Aware of what's going on rather than swoosh through with what's going on.
Why are some people eager to experience fear through horror films and roller coasters?
Because they live through it. You see, sometimes what is the kick is that you're scared but you don't die tells you you're alive in a safe way. It's weird, but for some people, not dying once they've been afraid tells them that they're alive in a way that regular life doesn't. Adrenaline. Isn't it amazing? Yep. There's something about you people in the horror movie are all getting dead, but I'm not, that makes you feel safer. And there's something about going on a roller coaster where it's controlled chaos, where you can go, ah, 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 and live through it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, isn't it amazing? Bungee jumping, right? Same thing. Like, I'm going to do this thing that should kill me, but because I'm attached to this thing, it won't. And at the bottom, when you're hanging there, you're like, ah, you feel so alive. People say, I felt so alive when I bungee jumped. It's because you didn't die. That's why you felt so alive. That works for some people. For some people, it's like, Veronica's like, I don't watch horror movies. There's enough fear in everyday life for me. I don't have to go looking for it. So for her, it doesn't make her feel more alive to see that stuff. For some people, it does. And also, we just want to add, it also helps you catalog more things that could kill you. You know, because there's this, we have this strong belief that you're actually out there cataloging all the things that could kill you all the time, and you share them with others, right? Did you see that thing on Facebook? Did you hear the Right? You share the things that could kill you. First, it's just what you guys do. It's one of the reasons you talk about the weather, right?
What's the weather doing? Because the weather has killed you enough times that you know you should be aware on some level what the weather's doing, especially when it's not exactly comfortable. So for some people, watching a horror movie and having the reanimated doll or whatever crazy stuff goes on, it's like, okay, that's one other thing to keep in mind that I could get killed by. Really, this really happens. Consciously, maybe not, but really, really does. Now, You guys are fascinating. We love you.
What is the relationship between fear, procrastination, distraction, and indecision?
We got to do them one at a time. Procrastination. Procrastination is more tied to certainty than it is tied to fear. Well, everything's tied to fear, but we would say procrastination is more of a certainty issue, meaning that you're looking for certainty, you're waiting for certainty, and you wait for certainty to act. And we always instruct people to act on clarity, and clarity's moment to moment, because there's no such thing as certainty. You're an uncertain species. That's how it works. Everything about you is uncertain. How many hairs are on your head? You don't even know, unless you have zero. So there you go. That's as uncertain as it gets. You're uncertain right from the get-go. So making a healthy relationship to uncertainty is extremely important. When you procrastinate a lot, you're waiting for the odds to get better, or you're waiting to know for sure. That's what procrastination looks like to us. Distraction is really interesting to us these days. We've been talking a lot about it, because the idea here is that rather than face what's going on in your life, like down here, you know, and noticing where you are on that line up to that bar, you throw in sex, drugs, and rock and roll, or whatever is your current potion. And you throw in Facebook, and you throw in Twitter, and you throw in obsessive email checking, and you throw in whatever you can throw in to say, I don't want to attend to what's really going on in my life. Mostly because you're fearful. Here's where fear comes in. You're fearful you can't handle what's going on in your life. You're fearful because you don't have answers. You're fearful because you don't have certainty. And because you have all that fear, you cover it up with things to distract, in order to try to have a way to get out of that experience. When we like to say, instead of distracting yourself, be conscious and go through the experience rather than try to just wave it away. Because if you just wave it away, it just comes back. Distraction never works in a long-term way. It'll work in a short-term, sure. Six-pack, usually will do it. But it doesn't make the problem go away. It just makes it not be as loud for a little while. Indecision, again, certainty, right? This is a lot of looking for certainty. It's like, if I yourself to death practically, because you just spend more time in if I's than just acting. And part of what happens there is you're looking for the entire answer all at once. And what you need is the step-by-step process. Indecision a lot of times can be cured with step-by-step, because instead of saying, if I do this, then all these other things will happen, it's how about I just do this one little step, and then go, how's it going? One little step. I better go this way. I better go that way. I better change a little. The problem with indecision is typically solved by taking a smaller chunk and then getting clarity on that smaller chunk and acting on that clarity, then taking another chunk. You guys have really been taught, if you can't do it all in a big bang sort of home run kind of way, don't try at all. And that's how fear keeps you small. It won't work out, so don't try. That one makes us a little crazy. Take a smaller step. Have that smaller step work out. Compare you to you and go on.
Is there a real power in fear?
There is a real power in fear. And the real power in fear is that it gets you to act, right? Fear drives your behavior all the time. So it's an extremely powerful force, which is why we say, instead of being fear-based, if you're consciousness-based and you're allowing consciousness to take that spot that fear is taking where it's pushing you, you can really empower yourself, really empower yourself. And again, it's all the things we've talked about. So this is a great way to talk about it. It gives you that opportunity. Gives you that opportunity to say, I could be fearful here, and I'm going to be conscious instead.
That's why we called our very first book The Choice for Consciousness, because you have to make a choice into, and then you choose and choose again to continue on the path of consciousness rather than default to familiar suffering and habitual response and hamster wheel thinking and the whole repetition of that bar that we've talked about. You choose out of that and you choose into a conscious experience with your fears. Can't get away from fear, but you can have a completely different relationship to it, which eventually might feel like having gotten away from fear. We're not saying that you're going to be as fearful as you are now forever. You will not be. But will you ever not have fear? Probably not. But you will have much smaller reactions to your fear, and it will fuel that consciousness journey rather than be the distraction from it.
What about feel the fear and do it anyway?
It's, you're going to feel fear, so get on with your life, was what we would say. You're going to feel fear. And it's not so much, that's, feel the fear and do it anyway is kind of that courageous thing, right? I'm going to be courageous in this moment.
Right.
Whereas for us, as a life mantra kind of a thing, it's, yes, I'm going to be fearful. It's powerful and really important to accept what is. I am experiencing fear, and I get to make some choices about how I'm going to interact with this fear. It's probably a great thing to leave you with, is how are you going to interact with your fear? And fear will make you feel disempowered if you let it, and fear can also be the driving force behind extreme empowerment if you allow it. It's that choosing to say, this action into this anxiety, worry place is so familiar, I can do it with my eyes closed. However, it doesn't give me an enjoyable life. I'm ready to have a different life. How can I have a different life? When I interact with my fears, I can have a different reaction. You can. We're giving you lots of ways today. Lots of ways to have a different reaction to the fear that you're going to have. Don't fall for the idea that you shouldn't have fear and something's wrong with you. And if you feel it, it's as valid as anything. Right? We have this idea that it's called the math problem. And if we asked you what 9,457,652.5 times 368,852.7 is, you wouldn't take the first answer that comes to your head. Not if anything mattered about it. Yet, you'll take the first emotion that floats by and grab a hold of it as if it was a gift that you would never give up. And typically that's a fear. And you say, it's here, so it must be real. And the truth of the matter is, it's here, so your interaction with it is a choice. Make the choice for consciousness. Have a different relationship with your fears. And do it again. And again, and again.